This episode of Football 301, Matt Harmon joins me for some QB musical chairs. We find some homes for the quarterback needy teams and the quarterbacks that are out there. An interesting group in a one quarterback draft class. Matt and I look at all the options. It was a lot of fun. Long one, but a lot of fun because there's a lot of teams that need quarterbacks. See you guys in a sec. Hello, and welcome back to Football 301. I'm your host, Nate Tice. Another great show today as we are in, I'll say, the thick of the offseason. We're a week away from the NFL Combine, which seems to usually launch the offseason because then we get into free agency. We get thick in the draft cycle with pro days because, you know, guys are just not going to work out the Combine. Little spoilers there, but that keeps happening. I'm surprised it won't happen again this year where we get guys not doing 40s and three cones. But anyways, we're going to make it fun because this offseason should be an interesting one after a very interesting 2025 season. We're going to talk about quarterbacks today and quarterback landing spots because, as always, there's a lot of needy teams out there and not a lot of options. And we're going to talk about that. It'll be fun to join me, as always, on Tuesday as we're going to get into the thick of some doubleheaders together. My guy, Matt Harmon. How you doing today, Matt? Working on some spreadsheets, wasting your time, ruining your breaks. How you doing? Great to see you, bud.
That's exactly right. Working on spreadsheets, working on coaching stuff. Yeah, so it's a good time because we're about to fully launch into the off season. There's no break here, man. I mean, like people keep saying that to me, like, oh, I did take a couple days off of work last week. Yeah. Enjoyed some time in Washington D.C. With my wife. That was great. But people, when are you taking vacations? Like a real vacation? How about frickin' June? That's when I'll take a real deal, like week off of work type of vacation. Because guess what? The off season is just as insane as the playing season, as we're calling it here.
Yeah, it's a year long league. It's a year long sport. It's exactly what the NFL wants. They want an event every month. You know what the event is in February? The Combine. March is free agency. April's the draft. May is the schedule announcements, I believe. June. Yeah,
that's where they jumped the shark. That's where the schedule release. That's the one they try to make an event.
That's where I've refused
to participate in. I'm not participating in the event that is the schedule release. I got big things going on, you know, receiver charting in May that I can't be, you know, taking time off for, except they did that one year, I guess, to get married. But regardless, for the most part, June is the vacation month because we're opening mini camps or whatever. Okay, whatever. We'll check in training.
We'll move on. The guys in shorts, which is just glorified like walkthroughs, OTAs, and everything. It used to be when it was minicamp when they did pads, it was a little bit different. But yeah, that's basically we view it how NFL staffs view it. It's like get through the draft. All right. Reconvene. Okay, figure some stuff out. All right, get through June, get to Father's Day. All right, now we got a month off. And then training camp starts and we get to do it all over again. I am not complaining, by the way. This has been my NFL cycle. And I think I've told you this, by the way. I don't know if I've ever said this on air. I worked with a guy with the Falcons. His name's Carl Pierberg. And he's worked for Arthur Blank more now. Great guy, more of an analytics guy. And he one time said to me, like just dead serious, he goes, have you ever realized every important decision in your life has been revolved around football? And I just kind of sat there. I was like, no, it's not. Wait a sec. When I was born, because it was trying to beat training camp, every move I've ever made, every vacation I've ever taken has been revolved around the football schedule. So maybe that's why this is so normal to me. That my biological clock is according to Paul Tagliabue. So yeah, we'll just move on from there. But just as we get this cycle, it's going to be an interesting offseason because quarterback wise, it's a one quarterback draft class, Fernando Mendoza. There are others that are, we talked about this with Charles last week. There's other names out there. I personally don't view them as round one guys. And I think the league also doesn't view them as true round one guys. You never know. Just takes one team to love a guy, try to beat one guy, get that fifth year. But what I'm saying all this is that there is not a lot of options out there, but there are still a lot of teams needing quarterback answers for this year, for long-term answers, dart throws, stop gaps, tank commanders, which I'm sure we'll talk about with a couple of these teams. But Matt and I are going to do a little bit of matchmaking today. Should be pretty fun. QBs and teams and the whole musical chairs of the quarterbacks. Always fun to talk about. But before we get into that, because the NFL just keeps churning, we got staffs to talk about, which you and I are going to do a little bit later on your show. But some assistants got hired the last couple of days. The Seahawks hired 49ers tight end coach Brian Fleury as offensive coordinator. I think I'm saying that right. Is he Marc-Andre's brother? No. But Raiders, we'll talk about that one. But Raiders hire Seahawks quarterback coach Andrew Jonico as offensive coordinator. I think I'm saying that one right as well. Rob Leonard promoted defensive coordinator. He was the run game and defensive line coach in 2025. Did a good job there. but Browns hire Falcons defensive pass coordinator Mike Ruttenberg as defensive coordinator to replace Jim Schwartz, because the Browns are just like, and Jim Schwartz is just like doing something right now, just saying like, I'm not working anywhere, I'm working here, so we'll see what happens with Schwartz. Maybe, I don't know, Raiders, I don't know. The Commanders hire defense coordinator Durante Jones. Any of these hires grabbed your attentions? I thought the Seahawks kind of continuing the Kubiak Shanahan tree with Fleury from the 49ers is an interesting one, but any of these grab your attention, Matt?
Yeah, Fleury was interesting for a couple reasons. Like, obviously, again, I mentioned I was kind of away for the weekend, so was diving back into this on Monday as I'm writing a massive article on play caller, new play callers, which is, by the way, a ton. Only four returning offensive coordinators in the AFC and six in the NFC this year, so it has been a huge turnover at the offensive coordinator spot league wide. So yeah, you mentioned this. We're doing a two-part coaching show on the Fantasy Forecast, one today, one later in the week on Thursday for the NFC. But so I was looking into Brian Fleury and putting together my whack job spreadsheet that I've done for this show. So looking through Fleury's background, I don't know if you know this, man, but he's done like everything from a football perspective.
Yeah, I know.
I had no idea, just because all I knew about him was obviously his most recent position was run game coordinator this past year, but he's been the tight ends coach for the 49ers since 2022. George Kittle is bummed to see him go. He's a big fan of his work. Obviously, Kittle, great player for the 49ers, been super productive. But he started in San Francisco actually in 2019 as a defensive quality control coach before going to the offensive side of the football in 2020. But you go way back in his background, he's like a high school quarterback. I think he was a collegiate quarterback. But his actually first job in coaching was a secondary coach, defensive coordinator at Sacred Heart at Townsend from 2009 to 2012. He's a special teams coordinator / defensive backs coach. He goes to the NFL in 2013. Quality control coach before becoming the assistant linebackers coach, and then was the linebackers coach for the 2014 and 2015 Browns. So again, and then he takes a stint with the Miami Dolphins front office, I guess, as the director of football research. So my first thought was like, oh, this guy's, you know, a tight ends coach. No way. He's done a lot more than everything. That. He's done everything essentially under the sun as a football coach. And again, even a stint as the director of football research for 2017 to 2018 for the Miami Dolphins. So pretty interesting background there on him. And I think that was my second reaction to the hire, was just diving into what was a varied resume for Fleury. The first one though is, okay, if he is the run game coordinator / tight ends coach for the 49ers, yeah, it's essentially doubling down on their outside zone identity for the Seattle Seahawks mm-hmm. under Kubiak last year, which makes a lot of sense. Obviously, they won the Super Bowl, and we saw that their running back won Super Bowl MVP because that run game was so electric. By the end of the year, I think they're wanting that to even be better and maybe more consistent in 2026 and beyond.
Yeah, and they can. Like, that was one of the things that made me so bullish on them being like a true elite team, them being the Seahawks, was that the run game was improving, and that's with a nothing burger at right guard and a okay center. Mm-hmm. The other three spots have good starters. Charles Cross, I think, is good to very good. Zabel, of course, was a great rookie year. Also, Zabel's already turned into a fun mic'd up guy because of like how he talks to other players. Like, you can tell he has like opposing players like questions. I think he had a clip with Calais Campbell, and they're like comparing moves like in the middle, like in between plays. They're like talking about like counters and stuff and like hand placement. I think it was with Calais Campbell, but it was with somebody. And then he has another one where he's talking to Leonard Williams about how he should go against, how he should bum rush the B gap when they slide to him, so he can like mess up with the slide. Like, Zabel's really cool. Like, going to be a player that we really like for a long time. And then Abe Lucas at right tackle. But I think that run game can get – Kenneth Walker's a free agent. Charbonnet's coming off an injury, so who knows with the running back position. It's going to be a high-floor offense. That's what the whole point of having this offensive system, and that's why I was bullish on the Seahawks, is that the floor is going to be high. But they do need to add a guard, and I think they do need to add a back. I mean, we'll see with Walker, we'll see with Charbonnet. But those are two things. But I think why I'm saying all that is that as long as they kind of keep the train on the tracks, like this offense could take another little bit, little like a mini bump. I'm not going to say, oh my God, now they're going to be top five. But they kind of finished like 14th-ish in a lot of metrics, you know, some around above average in a lot of metrics, where I say now they maybe go to like eighth if they just kind of hit this offseason to more of that good range in my eyes. But everything you said, though, about the background is so interesting because that reminds me of Stefanski's background and Drew Petzing's background when they were with the Vikings. But that was just with one team. Like Kevin Stefanski, he was started at Penn as a defensive back. Then he goes to the Vikings, assistant to the head coach, assistant quarterback coach, tight end coach, running back coach, quarterback coach, interim OC, then OC, then head coach. Drew Petzing, defensive back at Middlebury, Harvard volunteer student assistant, Boston College GA, Yale outside linebackers coach, Browns intern, Vikings assistant, assistant receivers coach, assistant quarterback coach, tight ends coach, receiver coach, all that stuff. Same kind of thing, just took every job. Like, and obviously those guys that stay on the staffs, like there's a reason, like the coaches trust them, coaches being on top, trust them. So he's probably a very detailed guy, a guy that is going to know that stuff, can kind of concoct a game plan and know what he's doing. Can we have that high floor? The only thing, like only drawback is he's never called plays. And you just don't know with that. You just never know when you're tabbing a guy to first time to actually call plays at how old is he? And that's not the end all be all. I'm not being an ageist, but but he 47. He was born. You gotta love when Wikipedia has 1979 or 1980 for their age. So, he's some criminal mastermind or anything. But that's just the one negative of all this is like you just don't know what he's gonna do, like with the first time calling plays. It's just a different animal calling plays. But it helps to have, of course, McDonald, you know, overseeing things, handling the defense, probably helping him have some of the same staff probably still there. That's gonna help as well. So I like this tab. I was curious who McDonald would pick, because he's shown that he'll kind of go off the beaten path or go with a guy that maybe he just thinks is good. I mean, going from what he did his first year to going to Kubiak, that's two very, very different coaches. So I liked it. I just, you know, got to see how the play calls go. But I think the Seahawks are sitting in a pretty good spot. They got money. They got picks. They got players. It's not a bad spot to be joining up to call plays. Any closing thoughts on Fleury or anyone else, any of these other hires? I think, you know, the Raiders – like, you know, it's not calling plays. Right. Leonard being there, he's buddies with Max Crosby, so I understand that. Like, you know, so it's there's a couple of things with their team. Their Cardinals kept on Nick Rawls as defensive coordinator and their O-line coach. I'm sure we'll talk about them a little bit later. That made sense too.
Yeah.
But yeah, any other roundups before we hit our first break?
Yeah, I thought the Nick Rawls staying in Arizona was good because I know that defense completely fell apart last year, but they had a ton of injuries in the secondary. And, you know, I know that you were a fan of some of the ideas that they were throwing out earlier this season, even dating back to I got to get out of the habit now of saying this season, last season, and then even the season before.
It's hard.
I thought they did. Yeah, it's hard. They did show some good things, I think, just from an ideas perspective from a defensive standpoint. I know Nick Rawls is a young guy to make sense. Like, that was probably one of the bigger concerns with Michael Ford, was like, who is he going to get on his staff? And I still think the LaFleur hire is one that I'm a fan of, and I think that's a pretty good pairing. Like, that keep that around, keep that going, keep some consistency for the players on that side of the ball, because I think offensively, like, he'll bring the right stuff and some of the tweaks that they need to see there. But yeah, I think Nick Rawls did an admirable job with the personnel, and I'd like to kind of see that continue to build as opposed to just, hey, we're scrapping that, we're starting all over from square one.
I agree. We'll talk more Cardinals because they'll be one of these kind of QB landing spot teams and the weirdest thing, even though they have two quarterbacks under contract. That might be interesting for other teams too. But no, the Rawls thing, like that whole division. Okay, so even last year, there was a Kubiak offense in Seattle, a Shanahan offense in San Francisco, and then McVay, who's a Shanahan Kubiak guy as well, in LA. So you have to stop those offenses six times a year, which is not easier said than done. And there's other offenses that, you know, use that scheme, you know, throughout the league. I would say just ballparking half, give or take. Rawls and McDonald are showing the two methods for what the current meta is, are the top down cover six, cover four, safeties rotating late, kind of keeping the blanket on everything, but those safeties have to be very involved. The slot has to be very involved. A too high defense. Rawls is the other version of how to kind of maybe counteract those offenses. Rawls and this defense have had some really nice moments against like the 49ers. They've had some good games. The Seahawks game this year, they played in Thursday night. The second time they played, it was a blowout. But the Thursday night game, which kind of like launched the Seahawks and then sunk the Cardinals in that game, is what they would do with Buda Baker, or what he would do with Buda Baker, is rotate late. So it's kind of a three safety system. And more defenses do this. If you watch Ohio State this last year, how they use Caleb Downs, rotate late, because if the other offense wants to use all that motion, we're going to hold the pen last. And then we rotate the safeties after that motion or at the snap. You need a versatile safety to do it. But that was kind of his version to stop this type of offensive system. So just an idea. I just liked it. The Cardinals are kind of, it's an abyss right now. They're rebuilding after the rebuild. And I think that they've taken a solid first step forward, kind of like in this new regime. I think the staff's actually okay. I know Hackett's kind of one of these online boogeymans. He's not calling plays. He's just there to organize and vibes. LaFleur's calling plays. The line coach still gives me worries. Justin Fry, but they're not going to spend a ton, and no one's going to go there, so might as well keep him back. But Rawls coming back, I do like a little bit more. But Cardinals are going to be one of those teams that we talk about after the break. I mean, well, maybe two breaks, because there's a lot of quarterback needy teams, but we are going to take a break and come back to those teams, and we're going to play a little bit quarterback matchmaker. See you guys in a sec. We are back. Let's get into a little quarterback musical chairs. Let's start with the Jets. Why not? They're picking two. You know, we can't go with the Raiders because they're going to go Fernando Mendoza. Yeah. Let's get that out of the way. Unless something crazy happens, it seems like Mendoza's their guy. But the Jets.
Well, can we just table set here real quick before we get into the Jets, which, by the way, I think is actually the one that I had the most trouble coming up with, like, a sellable solution prediction for them, which is what I'm going to throw out here for all of these teams. But just to table set real quick, to my count, I think there are 10 teams where I'm not sure who their week one starting quarterback is. Now we're going to talk about eight today, because one of those 10 teams is the Raiders, and he's not on the roster right now, but they're going to take Fernando Mendoza number one. It's not a very interesting thing to talk about, but like, that's the one quarterback in the one quarterback class. The other one is, I just don't know if Patrick Mahomes is going to start week one for the Kansas City Chiefs, but again, what are we going to talk about? Who's the backup in Kansas City? So yeah, that leaves us these eight teams. But even then, we remove Mendoza from the board here for one of those nine teams. I'm telling you guys, like, there are not eight more. Oh yeah. Like, this looks really good on paper solutions. I came up like free agents. It's Daniel Jones, it's Malik Willis. And then we get into like the Marcus Mariota, Joe Flacco, you know, like, you could maybe sell me one of those guys with a young player to bridge to. You could talk about some of the draft prospects, but then like just cut trade candidates. It's Geno Smith, Mac Jones, Kyler Murray, your boy Tanner McKee, Tua, who we're going to talk about, Anthony Richardson, Justin Fields, Kirk Cousins. Like, again, there's some of these teams, the eight that we're going to talk about. It's a real sell job. Hey, you're going to walk into the season with Shedeur Sanders competing with Anthony Richardson, something like that. Here you go. Like, good luck, folks. Like, I think we're going to see a lot of that this offseason. So that's why I think this is going to be a fun exercise to dive into.
I know. I had to get a little creative. I had more notes on this than I expected. I even maybe started to realize maybe what the Steelers are doing. Kind of go, hey, Mike McCarthy, Aaron Rodgers, let's sell some season tickets. 6-11, 7-9, or 7-10. like they're Rutgers or something, trying to just sell a couple tickets and some sponsorships to local businesses. I know my little kind of mini list I had, it's not a mini list, I don't know even what to call it. But yeah, I had Malik Willis, Daniel Jones, Kirk Cousins, Aaron Rodgers, Derek Carr, Tanner McKee, Jacoby Brissett, Kyler Murray. Hard. That's what I laughed about with the Cardinals. Mac Jones, Anthony Richardson Sr., Spencer Rattler, Tua, Davis Mills. It's like, maybe. Will Levis, maybe. Geno Smith. And then also, you know, Joe Burrow and CJ Stroud are getting floated out there. But then that also kind of just leads to your answer about that. Why would you trade when all these other teams are so desperate to just get somebody with a warm arm? So like why create your own problems when you're at the, you know, at the doorstep of actually competing? I don't know. That's me. That's how I look at it. I'm not in these buildings. But we'll start with the Jets, who have seemed to have a quarterback issue since I was a kid. I remember Mark Sanchez. I remember Chad Pennington. Chad Pennington was very fun in the aughts. I'll give him that. But I remember the Vinny Testaverde years. I remember a lot of Jets quarterbacks running through there. Geno Smith taking a shot to the jaw there. You know, there's a lot going on. There's been a lot of day two picks that have flamed out. There's been a lot going on. But we'll start with the Jets, who, again, have picked two in a one quarterback class. Just very Jetsian. Last year, they have Justin Fields. He has one more year in his contract. And really, I want to hear, I have a couple things, a couple theories on this, but Matt, who did you think would maybe be who do you think was the best match here if you had to do with the Jets and somebody playing quarterback for the New York Jets before they hit their three first round picks in 2027? They got two this year, but it's not, no quarterbacks to move up for, and they're pick two anyways, but maybe moving on to 2027.
God, this is the hardest one, I think, to come up with a sellable solution here, because I just don't even know what is this team right now. I mean, is this
sold everybody?
Is this a yeah, like what is this team? They sold a bunch of players at the trade deadline. They essentially cleaned out the coaching staff except the head coach. So just making Aaron Glenn the ultimate lame. Yeah, as one does, right? You fire everybody except the coaching, the head coach. The entire staff stinks except the guy at the top. Sure. It just makes Aaron Glenn look like the ultimate, you know, lame duck candidate. They tried to bring in Wink Martindale to, you know, be the defensive coordinator. He, depending on the, which, you know, the reporting that you believe or not, he essentially backed out of it because Aaron Glenn told him at the last minute, no, I'm actually going to call the place. So Wink's like, forget it, I'm not taking this job. They do manage to get Frank Reich to be the offensive coordinator. Again, you and I are doing a coaching show later today, so I don't want to spoil some of my outrage about the Frank Reich hire. But, I mean, Frank Reich in the year 2026? What are we talking about here? It just looks like, hey, we're just going to get through this year, and then all these guys are getting fired at the end of the end of the season, and then our new staff will be in place for the quarterback that we tank for this year. So with that in mind, it's like, truly, what is a sellable solution if that's what the team wants to be? And it kind of seems like that's what the team wants to be. I'm sure they're not going to come out and say it. Totally understand that. But if that's the idea, like, are they the team that could, you know, take on the Tua contract, like buy a draft pick to take on Tua? Because they're one of four teams, I believe, with about 80 plus million in cap room. It's the Titans, it's the Raiders, the Chargers, and the Jets. I floated online yesterday that the Titans could be that team to just, they have like over 100 million in cap room. They're never spending anything close to that. Just, and I know that like both Titans and Dolphins fans hated the idea, which I like. Okay, well, I guess the idea stinks. It was like, well, the Titans, you just get like a non-threatening backup to Cam Ward. Nobody's going to be like, oh, we got to see Tua if Cam Ward struggles. I don't think that's happening. And again, you're just buying a draft pick. But Dolphins fans don't think that the Dolphins should be trading away a draft pick, which I actually think is the big problem here. Like, do you want to trade away a draft pick just to get rid of Tua?
Ryan Tannehill, and they're like, not again.
Yeah, right. No, yeah, not again. Like, literally, it's the same thing. Which I do kind of understand it, but I also don't think that would end up the same way for either team necessarily. But
no.
Yeah, the Jets would make sense to do that, though. You're getting a draft pick, you have the cap space, and like Tua is a perfect, hey, this guy started games, this is credible, right? But it's, again, it's not going to go anywhere, and the team can still successfully tank with Tua under center. I also think they're a potential Derek Carr team. You know, Frank Reich wanted Derek Carr in Carolina. He flirted with him when he was the head coach play caller there before they ultimately traded the draft haul to get Bryce Young. And they hired his former quarterback coach, Bill Musgrave, to kind of round out this super boomer coaching staff. So those were like the two ideas that I had because it kind of feels like that's what the Jets want. Like, just something that we can say we tried while still essentially having all eyes on 2027 and beyond.
Yep. I think you nailed it. Like, just to tie a bow on it, like, I mean, more or less, that's exactly how I view it. It's that they're just punting on this year. They have three first round picks next year in a good class. I can already tell you, this is not just getting ahead. Oh, next year's class is always a better class. Next year's class is a good class, not just a quarterback receiver. There's some cool DBs. There's some really cool players, cool DNs. But that's why you have three first round picks, and everybody in the world knows they have three first round picks. And I'm right there with you. Somebody that joined that Jets staff, texted me and said that they're going there. And I said, all right, start scouting Texas. Start watching some March. Like, that's my first piece of advice for you. That's literally the first thing I texted back. I go, start watching Archie, because I think that's what you'll be doing for the next 12 months. You're like a bad college team that's already in recruiting cycle. That's how it kind of feels. I'm not just trying to pile on. All right, this is what the Jets do have going on for them. They have a cool young offensive line. I'll give them that.
Yes.
And Membu is a star in the making. Olufoshanu gave up pressures last year, but I like him better on film than a stat show. And I think some of that was the quarterback play. That's Justin Fields is every offensive tackle is worst enemy. Mm-hmm. I like the A.D. Mitchell dart throw that they made, and he actually had some moments last year. Garrett Wilson's a good player. Mason Taylor, I think, is going to be a nice, solid tight end, a number three in your passing attack. So who knows with Breece Hall? Brandon Allen was coming along, got hurt, but Breece Hall, they said they're probably going to tag him. They have the money, I guess. They're such a weird team. They do. They can afford him. Like when I'm like without even breaking a sweat. I was just looking. Their cap hits for next year. Their top cap hit is Justin Fields, quarterback, of course, at $23 million though. Their next biggest cap hit is Brandon Stevens at $14 million. They only have five players with a cap hit of more than $10 million, which one of them is Garrett Wilson, who's on a rookie contract.
It's like, God, poor Garrett.
What is this team? Jamie Sherwood, their linebacker, has the fourth biggest cap hit on this team at $11.5 million. It's just a punt year. I know. And so what we're just kind of setting the table for is that it feels like staff wise, anything, it's hard to go like, okay, they're going to build around this and then they get their guy. Cause the staff, I feel like, is just going to be completely wiped out. I don't think the GM will be, cause he's obviously has the freedom to make all these moves. And it was the staff getting wiped out. None of the execs or personnel guys. So obviously Woody and the GM, have something aligned here. But how I looked at it is, okay, they to me are originally a Kyler Murray team. Because they can handle his contract. They have a bunch of first round picks, so they can send a middle round pick. But also, Kyler might be, I know Kyler's stock has never been lower, but he also might be a little too good for what they want.
Too good.
Where they're trying to crap out this year, And so I say, you keep Monty in Arizona on the phone and go, what about your other quarterback, Jacoby Brissett, the tank commander himself? Not as much investment, knows his role. Great guy, great leader, familiarity with Frank Reich from Indianapolis.
Oh, and then, again,
don't have to give up as much as they probably would with Kyler, but then there's contract stuff they might have to do, blah, 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 blah. So that might be the answer, but the Cardinals might just go, well, we need somebody to take the snap. So that, the Cardinals might be actually in the weirdest way, might be more itching to get rid of Kyler than Jacoby. But Jacoby Brissett was kind of the guy I settled on as maybe the QB match here. If they, I actually would make a little bit more sense as I marinated on it. But any last thoughts with the Jets? But that's kind of where I'm at with them. This year is just going to be such a, hopefully you're interesting type year. And hopefully your young players look cool type year. That's really the win for, I think, for Jets fans. And hopefully you get the number one pick next year in what I think should be a good quarterback class. But any closing thoughts on the Jets before we move on?
Well, I've said a lot that the Jacoby Brissett stint for the Cardinals last year was just a complete fantasy scam. If they want to bring any of that to New York for Garrett Wilson, I'm totally cool with that. I am very much in favor of that. Garrett needs somebody to just drop back and push that football over and over again. Obviously, that was not going to be Justin Fields over the course of all of last season. I think I'm down. If that's your solution, I'm okay with it. Because you're still going to lose a bunch of games, but the number one receiver and A.D. Mitchell too. Like, both those guys get to eat. I would be cool with that. That's probably. It's actually probably less inspiring on paper than my trade for Derek Carr idea, but I think it can, it might end up being better for the passing game production.
Right. It's the least offensive of white flags that you can wave for this year. I think that's how I looked at it. That's the best way I can put it. Let's move on to another AFC East team, and that's the Dolphins. We've already hinted at them a little bit, and they are moving. They're already doing some stuff this offseason. They've released Bradley Chubb. They've released Tyreek Hill. Could Tua be next? I think I'll just get my thoughts out of the way, and I'm not going crazy here with saying this. I think this is the Malik Willis team because of who the head coach is and who the GM is coming from Green Bay, but there's still stuff to talk about what did you think about when you looked at the Dolphins situation? A quarterback that makes sense, and any thoughts on maybe Tyreek Hill? We'll save the Tyreek Hill chatter maybe for a second later.
Yeah, I think that Malik Willis does make a lot of sense here. I think it's a natural connection. I do also wonder, you know, where is Miami? Like, if they're truly rebuilding, is Malik Willis too high to shoot for? And I think that was the same. I had kind of had the same thought about with the Jets. Like, they would make sense. They have a space to do it, to be a Malik Willis team. But one, Malik, don't do it. Don't go there. Number two, like, again, is he? Well, yeah, obviously is not like a proven multi-game starter or anything like that. But just the flashes that he's shown, if he extends any of that into like a full season's worth of starting, is he too good for both of these AFC East teams? I think that Miami is certainly more respectable on paper, which is the thing to say here, than the Jets at this point, because they do have they had an offensive line that I think outkicked expectations, especially in the run game late last year. They still have Jalen Waddle. They still have Devon Achane. You know, they promote Bobby Slowick, who was on the staff last year. So you think like there's going to be some level of carry over with what they were doing offensively. I think that makes a lot of sense, and I do think Malik Willis fits that. But I think if they are truly thinking, hey, we're gonna punt this year, we're resetting, then I think this could be one of the like Marcus Mariota, you know, let him compete with Quinn Ewers and, you know, a rookie that you draft this year, and if he shows nothing, yeah, you just flush that pick down the toilet. I think that's another potential path for them.
Yeah, for me, it's like Malik Willis, if that doesn't work, then exactly what you said, some high-end backup vet to just get you through the season and reassess everything. Dolphins have just been so wonky for years now because they just got so aggressive with this roster. And then now they're just like, okay, handbrake, you know, yeah, whip a here. Let's see how this goes. And I think even for Willis is just such a, I just kind of had that earmarked. I'm like, okay, it's Malik Willis all the way. I haven't really marinated more than that. And I'm looking at kind of their, just how much would Willis get paid? And people are like, oh, he's going to break the bank. And I'm like, you know, the league's getting a little smarter with these quarterback contracts. To me, it's something like what Fields got, a little bit better than what Fields got from the Jets, which is about, yeah, $20 million a year. And then I looked at Geno's extension with the Seahawks that he signed in 2023. And that was a 3-year, $75 million a year, $25 million AAV, $40 million guaranteed. So maybe just the uptick with a little inflation from that. So what's that, $28 million, something right? Like around, that's kind of where I'm ballparking his number, somewhere $20 to $28 million for Willis. And I think it like a 2 or 3 year deal where you can get out of it after 2 years. That's how I would do it. And I think Willis would be like, yeah, I get the start. Let's go for it. That's kind of where I'm at with them, because the Dolphins to me are just a team that needs a reset. I hope that they don't think of themselves any different. You know what I mean? Like, that's always scary. A new guy gets there, a new GM, new head coach, and they're just like, we're going, you know, this is what we know. We're going to get the quarterback that we know. And we're going to win games. Some of these moves make me think they're going to eat their vegetables and eat their fruits this offseason. But I'm just curious what they go with Willis. Because what if Willis comes in there? He's not in the Green Bay ecosystem. He's with Bobby Slowick as offensive coordinator. And he looks like crap. And he looks like the project-y Tennessee Titans guy. I mean, you got to remember, I know Willis looked good this year when he played. But the offense was like, it was a very manufactured offense. I don't know how to best describe that.
Yeah.
Just how the motions were. It's very safe in as far as the reads, I should say. A lot of 1-2 to check down stuff, which isn't bad, but when you have to extrapolate that, it gets a little scary to me, especially what his background is of being so raw coming out of Liberty, so raw coming out of Tennessee. This guy got benched after one play his rookie year at one point, to put Levison. Yeah, it's just I get these teams are desperate, and he's very interesting. He would be one of the best scramblers and best runners in football, like period, top three, top four, as soon as he's a starter. But it's just also, he's going to be way up and down. Maybe that's what you want, and maybe that's the dart throw you want, but they seem like the one that needs to eat a lot of vegetables and everything. Any thoughts, though? I don't know about Slowick as OC. I kind of know what you think about him. but Tyreek Hill, though, I think that's an interesting kind of side character of this whole Dolphins offseason, so I'm using this as an excuse. Have you thought any landing spots potentially for him? I know Kansas City seems like the easiest one, but any other interesting ones that maybe have come to mind with Tyreek?
Yeah, as the dog returns to its vomit, the Chiefs just go back to Eric Bieniemy and Tyreek Hill, and that'll fix everything. That'll fix everything. Just go back to what we were. That past is old. Yeah, just go always back to past. That never bites anybody in the butt. My take is that if I was a team that needed a wide receiver, I wouldn't go close to Tyreek Hill. Like, I mean, just no thanks. There's enough good receivers right in the league that I don't need to go to the 32-year-old receiver coming back from a devastating knee injury. I'm sure he's optimistic.
Don't worry,
he's going to.
I'm sure speed isn't important to his game either. You know, so it's not a bad injury for him.
And he was already a player that was in decline. Like, there was already noticeable signs of decline during his last full season. Even in the first, what did he play? 4 games this season. I think you could see, like, he wasn't falling off the cliff, but he was definitely a declined player. So, like, he was already in decline. He's into his 30s now, squarely at this point. And yeah, you're right. Like, now it's another knee injury that's probably going to sap it's not even just like, oh, he tore his ACL, he dislocated his knee. It's a serious injury. I think it's a long shot that he'd even be ready to play week 1. So then that's not even to talk about all the other off the field things that he brings to the table that Miami was clearly managing, all of those things behind the scenes. So yeah, for me, if I was a team that needed a receiver, there's receivers in the draft. There's useful receivers in free agency this year. It's not worth it. It's not worth the hassle. Wouldn't bother.
I'm right there with you. Not only just like the drama he's caused the last couple of years too, but just that this is a guy that already was slowing down. We talked about it in September, and I remember vividly because I looked up his miles per hour stats, his tracking stats on NextGen Stats, and all of that stats, and all of that. Was dropping off. He wasn't breaking 20 miles an hour as much as he used to, which is that's why you have Tyreek Hill. 50 miles, his rate of going 50 miles an hour or more was dropping, which is significant because, again, that's why you have Tyreek Hill. He's not a big guy. Like, he's a little thicker, 5'10", and I think he's listed, high 180s. But, in his route running, it's weird to describe his route running because it's not what I would teach, but he made it his own because he's so freaking fast.
Yeah.
It works for him, but that's the thing. His entire life, that's how he's had to do it. And he has not shown the makeup, the character to improve. And I'm having deja vu to talk about, to improve that game. He's like, well, this works for me. I don't need to learn the details of that. I mean, there's so many times where he's getting told what to do still at 30 something years old, vet captain, I use with air quotes. Stuff like that where I'm just, all right, his game does not seem like one that ages well. Robert Woods aged well because he was so detailed and his game wasn't off of speed. It was off of strength.
How about Stephon Diggs this past year? Great. Another guy that aged really well coming off of a major injury. But the reason I was willing to, another guy that's got off the field, this, that, and the other. Yes. But the reason I was willing to bet on stings. The reason that I was willing to bet on Diggs as a guy that would beat the odds is because he has always thrived because he is like an elite technician. Yeah. And why he was a guy that his game would age well. Keenan Allen, different player, but sort of the same thing. Why he's still a useful and productive player for the Chargers is because he is an elite technician. So I don't think that Tyreek Hill fits in that same bucket.
Yeah. And even guys that are bigger, like a guy like Mike Williams, he couldn't get over injuries. And that's why he aged off a cliff, is because he had no other things to his game. He was a dunk artist.
Yeah.
He beat you vertically and dunk. So if you don't have those little other aspects of your game, Cooper Kupp has aged fairly well, even if he's not the fastest guy, because he can do other things. He can be used as basically an auxiliary tight end. That's why I'm stay away. I feel like the Chiefs are just going to sign him because they're just bringing everyone back to the bosom. I really do feel like that's going to happen. Like, I'm not trying to be so cynical about it, but I really do think that's just what's going to happen. But even after Tyreek, after that trade happened, said Tua has a better arm than Mahomes. Speaking of Tua, not sure what the hell happens to him. Very curious. His stock is as low as it can get. He has a reputation now as a guy in cold weather. That it is what it is. That's how the NFL works. It's very real. And also has injury stuff that has cropped up. He's gotten better, because he changed his game and changed as much as he can do. But how well is he age? He's 28 and he feels like he's 38, So I'm curious how he just ends up. I'm sure that's going to hang over them as well. So I think it's going to be a Willis team, the Malik Willis team, I should say, but also just they have other stuff they have to sort out with this roster, including Bobby Sloat calling plays. He's not going to be as bad as he was in Houston because it's just because as long as he has a better offensive line coach, I think, but also it's just not that like
it's
most
fine.
Exciting hire.
Yeah, it's fine.
There's so many, it's fine. It's a bell curve, guys. It's just like quarterbacks. It's a bell curve. There's a lot in the middle. There's a lot in the middle here. Like, you know, there's only a certain awesome guys at the top and there's some really bad ones at the bottom, but a lot are just caught in the middle. And he's one of the guys to me that's like average, I guess. All right. Let's go on to a team that just like loves to live in average. That's the Pittsburgh Steelers. I love Yin's guys, so don't worry. Bring in Mike McCarthy. Did not hire Scott Tolzien. Which actually, I had an interesting subplot for this one. If they did hire Scott Tolzien, so I was like, "Are they the Spencer Rattler team?" Because he was with them in New Orleans, but no, he stayed. He stayed in New Orleans. But the Steelers, Mike McCarthy, they hired Brian Angelicchio. Italians out there. Vikings passing game coordinator and tight end coach. He overlapped with Kirk Cousins in Minnesota. What do you think about the Steelers and their empty chair at quarterback? And does it rhyme with Raren Hodgers?
Yeah, unfortunately, I buy the Rodgers return smoke. So I think that's what's going to happen, especially because they put out like, oh, we really like Will Howard. I love it when they start to talk about these guys like they drafted them in the third round. It's like you took him in the sixth round. You obviously don't like him that much, okay? But like Mike McCarthy likes him too. He had gotten one of the many jobs he turned down last year that he withdrew his candidacy from, he would have taken Will Howard in the third round for sure. So the fact that they're already kind of putting that out there that we like our guy who's under contract, Mason Rudolph is still under contract for this team, it feels like they're gonna go with a Rodgers. They're just gonna run the quarterback room back from last year, but Aaron Rodgers gets to play in the offense that he actively rebelled against at the end of McCarthy's term before he realized, actually, I love that static West Coast stuff, and I hate all this modern New Age stuff, even though it helped me win two MVPs back-to-back. So, I think that's what's going to happen here, which I just think is so... It might be my least favorite solution of all of these, because I just don't... I don't think there were... like 4 or 5 quarters for Rodgers last year. I was like, okay, this is cool. This scratches my like nostalgia itch. He really lets his hair down, he can still rip it, that whole thing. But 98% of it last year was just no thanks. This doesn't work anymore. And I think, by the way, the offense is not at all set up on paper from a personnel standpoint to be what Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers would want it to be, as like an 11 personnel, detailed wide receivers, any of that stuff. So they got to put a lot of work into that because it's very Arthur Smith coded with all of the tight ends and DK Metcalf as the lone receiver. Just to me, I think that looks like a mess, but it looks like a mess that the Steelers are willing and excited to walk right back into.
And they guys saw the black and yellow coded season tickets. That's it. You gotta sell those. Like, that's what like you said about the Will Howard thing. That's what I kept coming back to. It's not like there's like an interesting backup, like Mason Rudolph. We know him. Will Howard to me, like, he got drafted where I thought he should have gotten drafted. I actually thought he had more like a 6th-7th undrafted free agent grade for me. And he's a PA guy, more Philly area, but they love having their PA guys on that team, their Pennsylvania guys on that team. This team is so frustrating to me because it just felt like they had an excuse to finally take that deep breath and kind of modernize themselves a little bit, the roster, how they do things. And it feels like they're just like, no, we like what we do. And they're like, man, I respect the Rooney so much, like so much. But it's just, they feel like one of these old family teams right now where they just don't want to rock the boat. They don't want to kind of like change up too much of what they do. McCarthy is so well liked. He's a great guy. He really is.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they want. They just want a kind of like more of a kumbaya locker room. I don't know what it is. Not that Tomlin wasn't, but I think what I'm saying is that they just didn't want to ruffle any feathers too much. And that feels like to me, okay, we don't want to ruffle feathers. We like trying to make Rodgers happy. We did everything possible. All right, we're making him happy. We're making everyone happy. We make fans happy. Okay, we can sell this. Like, here we come, 7 wins. And that's why it just feels like Rodgers is like too easy. Like, Kirk Cousins was the other name that comes up to me because of the overlap with the OC. but it's McCarthy's show, and I think McCarthy will be calling plays. So that to me feels like Rodgers. It's a little uninspiring. They have a cooler team, I think, or they have cooler players on that team. Like, I love Zach Frazier, the offensive lineman, the center, and I love a couple other guys, Mason McCormick, Troy Fontenot. Like, they have cool Darnell Washington, the mountain that rides at tight end. But this team needs more juice at receiver. They need, and watching Rodgers last year get the floor lifted up with that offense, like with the offensive line and the run game, and that's all we got. And I get DK Metcalf was the only real pass catcher, but that's the thing, was Rodgers wasn't thrown over the middle. He's throwing stuff to the outside. He's taking, in games where DK is out, which I know it's tough, he's still taking like Calvin Austin 1-on-1 against like all pro corners. And it's just like, he is not changing his ways at all. And that McCarthy is probably totally fine with that as well. He's not changing his ways at all. So again, not to be cynical with all this and kind of just kind of like whatever, but it just kind of, that's how I feel. It's like, this feels like just Rodgers all the way. And Cousins would maybe be my other option, but a vet option of some sort, because that's why you hire McCarthy. McCarthy isn't playing a young quarterback. He's had Dak and Aaron Rodgers. That's all he's had for 15 years, longer, almost 20 years. And before that, he had Alex Smith for 1 year in the worst offense that you'll see ever. And that's why I just feel like it's a vet. So to me, Cousins, maybe Derek Carr, but Rodgers, I would put as the favorite, almost even money favorite, probably even more than that, minus 200. I think I would put it at that. All right, let's get to the last team, sticking in the AFC North. Oh, I see how you did all this. So AFC teams first. Thank you, Stone. All right, AFC North. We'll go to the Cleveland Browns, who they had two. If you have two rookie quarterbacks, do you have any? That's what it felt like this year. They have Shedeur Sanders and Dylan Gabriel both under contract going into year two. And I think anyone, and I know what the narrative is about with Shedeur Sanders, but truly was the worst starting quarterback in football last year. Like, truly. And also going into an offense that needs a bunch of offensive linemen, needs a lot going on this team, brings in Todd Monken, who can go any way, shape or form, with what he prefers at quarterback. But I am curious what your answer was to fill this seat as the 2026 starter for Cleveland Browns, who can get added to that famous jersey and add a new name down there, maybe in the bottom right.
Okay, so I want to remind people, these are my predictions, not what I would do, okay, or anything like that. But my prediction for what happens for the Browns, and I, by the way, you pointed this out about Todd Monken and, you know, writing the coaching piece that I'm working on. This was, you know, going through his background is a good reminder of this, that, yeah, he's been almost like a schematic chameleon in his last three stops. I guess technically four stops, because he was the offensive coordinator for the Bucks and then the Browns, and that was pretty, like, spread out vertical based offense. Then he goes to Georgia and he really invests in kind of this the Georgia ethos, right, where it's a lot of power run concept, stuff like that. And then he's been this zone, you know, heavy personnel groupings in Baltimore, and that's been successful too. And then you look at the Browns depth chart and it's like, well, that's a blank slate, baby. They don't have an offensive line. They have to completely remake the wide receiver room. The Jerry Jeudy contract is terrible. None of their young guys have really stepped up. So that's a full rebuild there. So good thing you got yourself a schematic chameleon, because I don't know what the hell they're going to look like from an on-field perspective there. And then you get to the quarterback room, and obviously Shedeur was statistically really, really poor. I think he probably was fine enough that you could start in week one, I guess. My prediction on what happens is that they make a trade for a guy like Anthony Richardson and throw him into this quarterback room with Shedeur, with Anthony Richardson. And again, I wouldn't do this in 1,000 lifetimes, but they seem like they're at least floating the idea of, hey, what if we gave Deshaun Watson like one more try? You know, that has at least
been already floated.
That's what I'm saying. They're already floating. And I wouldn't do it in 1,000 lifetimes, but never. It seems like they might do it in this lifetime. So you get yourself the wackiest quarterback room in the league between, and I'm using wacky as opposed to any other, you know, adjective. Shador, you've got Watson, you've got Anthony Richardson. All three of those guys make starts, and, you know, Todd Monken needs a nice long vacation at the end of the year.
I know, and they're already punting on Dylan Gabriel, it seems like. That was nobody, fun for a month and a half.
Well, we knew that, okay, so funny, in fairness, we knew they punted on that pick the moment that they made it. Me, you, and Charles all on the draft show were like, listen, we knew Shador wasn't a first-round caliber quarterback, but this is too much. And then that was too much. That was like, okay, all right, now this is getting a little ridiculous here. The talking heads thought it was ridiculous, like 5 picks into the draft. Once they made the Dylan Gabriel pick, that was when even the three of us were like, okay, we got to throw our hands up here. Like, this is enough already.
Because it was like, if they took a couple other candidates, I would have been like, okay, all right, I don't agree with that, but I understand you can make the argument. For me, it would have been like Riley Leonard, and, you know, everybody has their favorite.
Yeah.
But then they went Dylan Gabriel, and I'm like, old, small, like, what are you guys just sorting by? I have a friend that says that the Browns analytics staff, they scout quarterbacks by sorting by total yards. So they just go.
Yeah, that's pretty much.
That's their analytics. Who led in passing yards last year? Okay, those are our top guys. And it's like, oh, that's how you ended up on Dylan Gabriel, huh? No, but I do think that, like, it's just funny that, okay, he's gone. Shador had a couple moments, but, like, to me, like, if I'm being perfectly honest, everybody, that's a backup at best.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
At best. There's nothing there. There's nothing there. Just like, I know it's crazy to say that because I see the clips and everything. It's like, no, like, Monken's being nice. They're probably going to have someone new. And Stone's reminding me he is a Pro Bowler. Yes, he is. And what's funny is there's not like some of these
only
other teams.
Only because Justin Fields turned down the Pro Bowl, apparently.
Did David Garrard turn it down? Or
Joe Flacco was there, the other Browns quarterback. Yeah, it's just, I mean, insane stuff.
Did Snoop Huntley turn it down this year? But I look at them and I'm like, could they go? The Jets, I ended up with Jacoby Brissett. And like, that's always the thing. It's like, okay, maybe these high end backups that can be your stopgap for a year while you get your guy of the future. But they've already done that with Jacoby. Another name that came to mind was, maybe Jameis Winston, some Bucks connection there with Monken. Already done the Jameis Winston in Cleveland thing just a couple of years ago. And I get it's a new regime and who cares and all that, but it's still pretty, it kind of cracks me up. It's like, they've already done those names. Maybe Mariota. This is a team that, like, I think they have to address quarterback next year in 2027. Mm-hmm. And this year, it's more about making sure that the ecosystems for whoever you drop in isn't just dire, because that O-line needs so much injection of talent, the young talent. And that's before you get into a receiver room, because Judy's Judy, but you need another guy in there. Tillman can't stay healthy. And then tight end, of course, you got Harold Fannin. It's great. And then defense, now we got questions there because a new defense play car, we'll see. They already moved on from David Njoku, which everyone knew because it's just because of cap stuff. But that also just leads into issues. You're just dropping solid players that can play snaps for you. The only guy,
Can I just say one thing about David Njoku? This stuff is so funny to me. Remember at the NFL trade deadline, there were all these rumors about, they should trade David Njoku because he's not coming back to this team next year. He's a free agent. You know, the Harold Fannin is already lapped him as the tight end one. And then they don't trade David Njoku. And then he tweets out the Wolf of Wall Street clip or whatever.
I'm not leaving.
DiCaprio says, I'm not effing leaving. And then a few months later, he's just like, thanks, Cleveland. Yeah, I'm out of here. It's like, why didn't you just trade him? I'm not leaving. I love Cleveland. Buddy, you're leaving in 3 months. Like, just, the trade deadline stuff is so stupid. And I guess Bradley Chubb, same thing with the Dolphins. Like, that's always the best. Like, we're gonna hang on to these guys for, I don't know, reasons. Give me a break. Like, what a waste of our time.
The best one ever recently was the Derrick Henry one, where the Ravens wanted to trade for him for a third rounder. I don't know if I've ever said this on air. wanted to trade for him for a third rounder, and the owner turned it down because she just wanted to do the jersey ceremony at the in the last game, saying like, "Thanks for all your time here in Nashville and Tennessee." And then he just leaves for the Ravens.
I remember that because that was so crazy to me that Derrick Henry's this like storied player that they hung on to, you know, they hung on to through the trade deadline, and he's literally at the last week of the season, he's like got a mic in his hand and giving a speech and waving goodbye. I'm like, so we're not even gonna like have the pretense that we might want to re-sign this guy. Like, hey, we love him, but a contender might pluck him away. No, everybody knew he was leaving. He knew he was leaving, and they still passed that up just to.
And everyone was good with it.
Yeah, everybody's fine with it.
That one still gets me because she just wanted to do that. She wanted to give him the mic and be down there on the field and just go, this is my guy. I love the NFL. I really do.
What a stupid
it's
sport.
So stupid sometimes. They try to act so button up and professional, and some teams do, and then there's other teams. There's just like always like a half dozen teams. It's just like, oh my God, thank you so much for you being you. Speaking of which, being you, the one, there's more of a joke about me, the one guy that I was like, okay, I can maybe build this connection is if they traded for Tanner McKee. Because Andrew Berry was an Eagle from the Eagles, can call up Howie. And last time he did it, Howie goes, well, enough about Tanner. How about this Kenny Pickett guy? I got a fresh Kenny Pickett for you. You want to trade for him instead?
They bought it.
He lasted a month. But no, that was one name that possibly came to mind where you're throwing a dart. But then, like, if you're wrong, then you're just back to where you started a year later. And you probably have to pay him. I'm going to talk a little bit more about Tanner in a sec. But you probably have to pay him too. So Cleveland, to me, it feels very much like the Jets. Weird. Those two teams seem to be connected for forever. The Eric Mangini teams. But I do think that they're just going to, like, they have to kind of, like, just find some stopgap option. Whether, I mean, maybe it's Cousins. Maybe it's something of that sort. Monken will adapt to whoever. You got to remember, too, when his first play calling was with Oklahoma State. Or first time as a play caller. He worked with my dad in Jacksonville. He's a receiver coach background. Then he goes to call plays at Okie State. And that was when Brandon Whedon and Blackman were going off. And that's how Whedon became a first round pick at 28 years old or whatever it was ton of RPOs. Like they were one of the offenses that used RPO. They kind of like advanced RPOs like before everybody else, a lot of pistol kind of stuff and everything. So again, just kind of speaking to Monken's multifaceted background, like no matter who he has, he'll adapt to it. But that's the thing. It's like, is there anybody with any talent to go after? I think they just kind of punt on the year rather than finding their long-term options, see what they got, find some stopgap guy. Again, I think Cousins actually might not be the worst option here. Richardson, Rattler, those maybe are dart throws, but I would maybe wait a year before you actually try and do that. Get that old line souped up. All right. We're going to take our last break. God, we still have another AFC team and a couple NFC teams to get through. We'll be back in just one sec. See you guys then. All right, we are back. Let's get to the Indianapolis Colts. I'm going to be in Indianapolis next week. So are you for the combine. I'm actually going to be there a couple times in the next few months because I'm going to be calling some indoor football games with Jason Fitz and Caroline Fenton. Make sure you check out those games. Yahoo. Affiliation there, a little plug there. Let's get to the Colts because I just said, do you have two rookie quarterbacks? Do you have any? What if you have three quarterbacks with question marks? Do you have any? Daniel Jones, who they swooped up, 1 year contract, kind of everything good that could have happened, which you hope for on a 1 year contract happened, and everything bad that could have possibly happened on a 1 year contract. The Colts went through it all this year. They went through the highs, they went through the lows, they went through the trade, make the push. With Sauce Gardner, trade two future first rounders, and then Daniel Jones pops his Achilles. And the offense was starting to taper off a little bit before that because he was starting to get banged up, which leads into the issues with having Daniel Jones possibly on a long-term contract. But what do you make of this, Matt? What do you make of the Colts' mess at the quarterback situation? Do you think they bring back Jones? Do they try Richardson after basically on him for the last year? Do they go with Riley Leonard, a six-round pick? Is there another option, another door I'm not even thinking of? What do you think of the Colts situation right now?
The only thing I think for sure is I think it's over with them and Richardson. My guess is that it will be Daniel Jones back either via a contract extension, you know, like a little bit of a short-term deal, maybe a team-friendly one because protect themselves from the injuries, or they franchise tag him and they because they found a way to retain Alec Pierce. It seems like they're going to do whatever they can to keep Pierce in the building. Does that lead them to bring to move on from Michael Pittman? That's an open question to me. I talked to Pittman in San Francisco at the Super Bowl, and by the way, a couple takeaways from my conversation with Michael is, well, number one, great dude that like some of these wide receiver needy teams, if they do want to trade him away, should be lining up for, because he's going to be great in the room, especially if you have a young receiver room. Like let's get that guy in there, and help him like help out, because he's just great with that. Number two, you could tell just talking to him how bummed he was about the Daniel Jones injury, because those guys had the whole team, obviously it sucked, because and it wasn't he wasn't not the the Achilles injury, you brought it up. I mean, he was like, no, that guy broke his leg. He broke his leg and was out there trying to, you know, kind of play through it, and just again really bummed because they had a great connection and a great chemistry. And Pittman's a guy that's played with a ton of quarterbacks, which I brought up at the end of the conversation. He's like, yeah, and I'm really not trying to like break in another one here. So I think the whole team wants Daniel Jones back, and I think they're desperately trying to hold on to what that was at the beginning of the season. And I think Riley Leonard, your boy, was, you know, good enough in his brief moments to, if you got to play him for the first month of the season while Daniel Jones gets back into shape and recovers, I think that's a totally plausible thing to do. So I actually think they were the easiest one, which means that it won't happen. Something crazy will go on, but they were the easiest one to project, which I think they find a way to bring back Daniel Jones, either franchise tag or probably maybe a little bit more affordable for them, like a short-term deal, and just ride it out if you have to, like a month with Riley Leonard. I think that makes a lot of sense considering they brought the coaching staff and the front office back too.
That's the thing, is they brought everybody back. That feels like you bring everybody back, meaning quarterback as well. No, I really have nothing to add. I think you nailed it. That's kind of what I think too. I think they view Riley Leonard as an interesting backup that to continue developing, and that he can maybe be your stopgap guy for a month until Jones comes back. The thing with it's just so scary with Jones because it's an Achilles, and our two recent data points are Kirk Cousins and Aaron Rodgers, but they are also guys. Cousins was his mid-30s, Rodgers his late 30s, is that like they didn't look great coming off the Achilles the next year. Jones uses his athleticism, and that's something that is he didn't as much this year, which was interesting. He wasn't scrambling as much, he wasn't taking as many sacks, still got hurt because he is tough, and that's why he can play with a broken leg. That is one thing Daniel Jones you can never accuse him of, is that he is physically tough, very tough. That's why you can be Grond at the battering ram under Brian Dable. But this year he was so much more better from the pocket, finding answers. I thought Shane Steichen was doing a great job, which is making things clean for him. You know, the classic, make a mistake, make it fast. I just thought his decision-making was so much better. Him and Darnold were kind of like, you know, just the cousins of this season, not Kirk Cousins, but that they were related this season. They were tied together. I felt like, and how they were playing this year and kind of like, washing away some of the previous demons they had with their play styles. But the thing is, he's coming off an Achilles, and it's not like he hasn't suffered injuries before. And that's what concerns me a little about the long-term commitment to him. Maybe getting through this year and this regime is coaching and scouting and is execing for their coaching lives, you know, their contracts basically. I think there is some thoughtfulness here, or they're trying to be thoughtful, but it's just there's no perfect answer. So I think what you laid out is probably their best option going forward, and using Richardson they don't have a first rounder next year either because of the Sauce Gardner trade. So using Richardson as some to recoup some of the draft capital to make this all worth it, you know, maybe getting like, I mean, his stock's not great. Trey Lance went for what, round four? That's probably what he'll go for if he does get traded. Round three, maybe, but I don't think that. I think it's more round four he'll go for.
Yeah. I'll say four.
So yeah. Trying to get something like that. I think that's really their path going forward. I don't know. Colts are, when they made that trade, the Sauce Gardner trade, it was so aggressive. Again, I would rather trade for a defensive lineman than a corner. I understood why they went for a corner, because they desperately have needed that for years. And it was their one kind of hangup on their team, because they were kind of building a contender. We saw how wide open the AFC is. The Patriots just won the AFC. So I am not knocking them being aggressive and pushing for it in this year or the 2025 season of how wide open it was in that conference. It's just that everything bad that could have happened, it went bad. It truly did, including their quarterback popping his Achilles after playing through an injury. So, yeah, I think, again, how you laid it out is a pretty good path for them, or at least one of the options that's easy to swallow. The franchise tag for a quarterback is $47 million. In 2026, the Colts have right now $34 million in cap space. $22 million in dead cap. Way to go. Way to keep that thing tidy. That's because they don't get rid of any of their picks.
Yeah, they don't. They
sign everybody back. So, okay, they have some ways to do it. The Alec Pierce thing, of course, I know everybody wants him. He's like someone labeled him as the skeleton key of everybody's free agency plans. Looks like they're going to bring him back. I think it would be foolish not to bring him back. Yeah. But any closing thoughts on the Colts? But because again, I thought you laid it out pretty tidy.
Yeah. I think they're the easiest team to figure out what they want to do. Yeah. It's pretty obvious at this point.
Yeah. And everybody knows I like Riley Leonard. What he showed was encouraging. I think it would be insane to just go, yeah, he's our starter. So like even me, who's the most bullish guy on Riley Leonard. So I just want to know that. I do not think that is one of the paths they should go down. Like, I think that is, but how you laid it out, that he's the kind of mini stopgap until Jones is
placeholder.
Okay. That is, yes, placeholder. That's tolerable to me. Keep it warm and just see what you got. Get him more reps and then go, okay, if Jones is just franchise tag and we don't sign him for a long term, okay, now maybe we have something with Leonard in that time. You just like, I think that's maybe the best way to kind of like scratch a lot of itches that they have right now. Let's go on to the Vikings, who were a Daniel Jones team. I don't know if anyone's told you that. They really wanted to re-sign him. They really, really, really wanted to re-sign him. I'm not sure if that's been reported yet. I think that got reported by 40 people in the last couple months. They really wanted to bring back Daniel Jones.
They really did.
And when that didn't happen, they really did. I want to make sure you know that. They really wanted to bring him back. Wow. Last spring, I was like, man, this is the messaging. I don't talk to many people in the league as much as I think people think. And so when I look at some of these national reporters and I see what they say, I try to kind of like reverse engineer and look at the context. Like, this is strange. Everybody's talking about them trying to get these free agents, and Vikings fans are yelling at me. And I'm like, I don't know, guys. This is weird messaging. And I read a lot of these messages. This is a weird, like, things they're leaking out right now. And now I see why. Because JJ McCarthy was not great last year.
The Vikings wanted Sam Darnold back. He just took the same contract in Seattle. They wanted Daniel Jones back, but he took a opportunity to start in Indianapolis. They wanted Aaron Rodgers, but we didn't really. They wanted basically anything except to hand the starting job over to the guy they took 10th overall. Like less than a year ago. That was in the spring last year.
A year and a half away. That was it. One year with barely any playing time in the preseason. They're like, oh boy. And again, I think you saw how McCarthy played. There, you know, a couple flashes, but he is still very project-y. And that's a little scary because of how much he's getting hurt and all that. So obviously it seems like they want somebody to come in to compete with McCarthy at the very least. And I think really overtake McCarthy until they deem him ready, which might not be never, might be middle next season. Who knows? But for the Vikings, aggressive franchise who have no GM right now, I think Robert Zinsky is running their operation and Ryan, the inevitable Grigson as well. What did you think about this, Matt? Any names come to mind that maybe could trade for, sign, anything come to mind for the Vikings to compete with McCarthy?
The next two teams, I think both, which Vikings Cardinals are the next two we're going to talk about. I think both of them would love to trade for Mac Jones. I don't think the Niners are going to, unless they get like a third round pick or maybe a second. I don't think they just want to trade Mac Jones because he really helped them out last year. And I think they like having him around. And yeah, so don't think that's going to happen. I think they'd love to trade for Mac Jones, but I do think they're teams that would look for, especially Minnesota in particular, because I love the way you laid this out. I think they'd love to get somebody in there that they can sort of say is competition for JJ McCarthy when they would be the odds-on favorite to be the week one starter. And maybe they don't start all year, but yeah, that frame it that way. Like, hey, we're just bringing in someone to push JJ. and whoever this person is pushes JJ out of the starting lineup, which maybe he can reclaim at some point. So they would make sense as like a Geno Smith team, because I think he's out of Las Vegas. And again, I think you could bucket the Cardinals in here too. I think they would make a lot of sense as like a Geno Smith or a Tanner McKee team. You brought up McKee earlier. I think either of those would be like fascinating solutions-ish for a team like Minnesota or Arizona. If I'm Geno, I would love to get to Minnesota. I would love for my last act in the NFL as a starter to not be the starting quarterback for the worst team in the league. And I think Geno made a lot of the problems in Las Vegas last year. I don't think he was all of the problems in Las Vegas last year. Is he going to come in here and be as good as he was in 2022, Geno Smith, for the Seattle Seahawks? I don't think so, but I think he could be better than he was for the Raiders last year if he was the Vikings starting quarterback. So if he got cut by the Raiders, which I assume he will be cut, I think he would make a lot of sense for Minnesota, or a trade for a Tanner McKee type. I also think makes sense for them. Do you think they're a Kyler team at all? I go back and forth on this. I actually think, by the way, I didn't mention this, but I thought if Rodgers retires, which he should, if he retires, I actually kind of think the Steelers might make sense as a Kyler team. I think he kind of fit in like McCarthy's offense. More. Yeah, I think that actually makes a lot of sense. Didn't bring that up, but I don't know. I thought about Minnesota, but they just ask their quarterback to push the ball deep and intermediate over the middle of the field, and like that's the whole problem with Arizona and Kyler in the last offense. So I know they're a popular Kyler destination, but I had trouble sort of connecting those dots in my mind. So I sort of settled on a Geno Smith type acquisition, or like a trade for a Tanner McKee type.
The Kyler too, his contract's hard for some teams, and the Vikings are pretty cash strapped. I think
exactly.
You can pull everyone can pull levers, like that's the thing. How I always look at that is not that you take the cap numbers as literal. I just like it to look at it as general, like, oh, okay, they have to do things to get cap complacent, or they have a ton of room without doing things. Like, it's not taken at all as literal as it seems. So maybe that's why it's a little complicated with Kyler. Kyler, to me, like, that makes sense in the sense that he does throw a great deep ball. It's just that he doesn't work the stuff that this offense really wants to work through. Like you said, exactly. They immediate the digs. So it's like, I don't know, Robin Peter, pay Paul. And like, what are you going to give up to him? I mean, if you get a pick back, like to take the contract, great. But I don't think the Cardinals are going to be doing that. But so that Geno to me is interesting because he's a high wire act as far as like, he's going to push it. That's Geno. This team thinks they can win the Super Bowl. Like the coaches do, at the very least. That's why they have power right now. And again, reading context and reading reports, it's that, the coaches, that's why they signed some of these vets last year. The offensive line vets, the D-line vets, that mixed results, I would say. There were some positives with that, but also some negatives. Yeah. So to me, that means vet. Like, you know, as far as coaches who think that they're going to be pushing to the Super Bowl. So vets, all right, is that Kyler? Is that Geno? There's not a lot of familiarity there. Is that Kirk Cousins? Because the overlap that KOC has had, are we bringing him back? That might be the safest answer, I would say. Bringing in a vet won't rock the boat too much. Well, Kirk is Kirk. Like, he has a little bit more of a ego with the stuff than I think he lets on. I think as you see with some of the stuff that happens. But like Geno, as far as like, would be fun in a football sense because of just his play style matches what the Vikings and Kevin O'Connell wants to do, which is just launching stuff and play action and launch. Let our receivers go to work. Let the scheme go to work. Always be aggressive. You take the sacks, you take the picks, because we're just going to be pushing for explosive plays. Geno can do that. To me, what I want to see them do is trade for Tanner McKee, because if they think they are going to be pushing, they just had a winning record, and they had a better record than the Lions playing Carson Wentz, playing what's his face?
Half Max, of Carson Wentz.
Max Brosmer for a couple games, who put up stinkers, like JJ McCarthy, sabotaging it. Like, so they, and I think their sense, they're like, okay, if we get someone that can run us on, keep us on the tracks, we can go. I want to see him push for Tanner McKee and go for that trade, because they're an aggressive team. He's in the fourth year of his contract, so it'll be due for an extension, but you can make that work with the last year and keeping it cheap and then boost into an extension. So if they think they're so good and they think this roster and their coaches are good, but you can tell they have a lot of power now, you're not going to be bad enough to take a quarterback. You're going to be right back in McCarthy range, you know, in next year's class. And we just saw what happened here, where they're kind of stuck in that middle ground, like where an NBA team doesn't want to be. So I think McKee might be the best path as far as doing what they want to do. Having a young guy, getting a cheap year for the fourth year, having a young guy that you can grow with, also a guy that stands in the pocket, stands and delivers, plays a style that KOC has seemed to like more from his quarterbacks. I mean, really just, maybe I'm just making a Darnold adjacent, but more of that, you know, stand. I mean, he's tall and he launches it. Like, that's why I think Tanner McKee and Geno are coming to mind for me. But I just look kind of the history, and I've talked about this a few times. I think McKee is one of the most interesting names this whole offseason. If I were betting, I do think he does get traded because I just think there's so many seats open and he's shown enough to be traded for. If you look back at some quarterback trades where these backups get traded, you got Matt Schaub in 2007, went from the Falcons to the Texans. He got traded for 2 second rounders and a first round pick swap. The Falcons moved up from pick 10 to pick 8. So just two spots. But that is pre new CBA. So that's a different world as well. But okay, 2011, Kevin Cobb traded from the Eagles, backup, was a second rounder, traded for a second rounder and a starting cornerback. 2017, Jimmy G traded for a second rounder. He was entering the fourth year of his rookie deal and got the extension where he, 15, 67, yeah, I think that's what he was. He got the extension then, but he got the extension after he got traded. He got very, very highly paid after kind of being a stopgap starter for one of the Patriots suspensions. Yeah, I have to remember which one this one was. I think this was Deflategate that Jimmy G had to start for that for those couple weeks. So that's why I think everything is on the table for them. But that to me would be the most exciting one, maybe one that would be interesting. But I don't think they go down this path because they're talking vet. They're talking McKee is kind of vetty, but not really. Would be Anthony Richardson. But that would just be, okay, now we got two projects. Let's break the pool cue and training camp. You know what I mean? You're just getting a souped up version of the problems you already have. Like that's, I would much rather bet on Richardson than McCarthy because of the traits, but we still have a lot of issues to work through. And is that what a team that's pushing for the Super Bowl wants? Last year, that would have been more interesting, not this year. That's why the makeups and the timelines of these teams is so iffy. McKee, to me, would solve a lot of problems of how they're trying to bridge everything and tie everything together as far as timeline. So that's what I came down to. Cousins or McKee, I guess. And Geno would be interesting as well. But yeah, Vikings, man. All right, let's move on to the Cardinals. Oh, do you have any more thoughts on the Vikings? One last thought?
No, I just think it's a lot. It's pretty complicated to your point there.
I know that's.
The more I look at it, the more I think this entire ecosystem and operation is kind of overrated. Like they have Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison is, I think, fine. Also a little bit overrated nationally. Offensive line has problems. Yeah, Naylor's gone. TJ Hockenson is also probably gone and hasn't been good since he joined his ACL. So yeah, I kind of think this whole situation is a little bit overrated, which is sort of why I landed on Geno. Like, just get in there and throw the ball 180 times, blindly to Justin Jefferson and see what happens.
Just go 9-8, 10-7, and just be the funkiest explosive offense and the funkiest. Yeah,
try it again
defense.
Next year with a better
just
quarterback.
Just live
class.
Off explosives. Yeah. Some games you blow a team out of the water because everything's clicking. Some teams you lose by 3 scores. Okay, whatever. That's our team right now. I'm kind of with Aaron Jones is breaking down. Always is. Jordan Mason wasn't fine in this offense. But those are vet guys. Yeah, again, there's no like who are the young guys that kind of going with. Yeah, Vikings are fascinating to me. They because certain things could click, but they just fire their freaking GM. So, all right, we'll go on to the Cardinals. Another team that I think fascinating, but actually fascinating a little bit more. We already talked about their staff a little bit. We've already talked about Kyler. I even mentioned Jacoby Brissett with the Jets. Any other thoughts with the Cardinals? Who should go be the quarterback in 2026 or any more thoughts on this team right now?
Yeah, I actually kind of liked them as a Tanner McKee team. I mentioned like Vikings or Cardinals.
That's not a bad one either.
Because I think that's like, a creative solution to a tough problem. Like you're not going to be able to pick a quarterback here. You're not necessarily in a position to attract a big time free agent. You're moving on from Kyler Murray. You know, hey, this is a guy you can trade for. I don't know what he would cost in a trade, but I don't think it would be anything crazy. And then in that case, like, hey, we'll give this guy a I think in that situation, you keep Jacoby Brissett around, who's totally fine to just move right back into a backup quarterback role. But if McKee doesn't work out, you have a guy that you can throw out there and has familiarity with the pass catchers. It's a new offensive system, but there's some carryover in the language between what Petzing's going to run versus what LaFleur is going to want to run, and especially like where they want to attack in the middle of the field. I think actually that would make a lot of sense. And again, if McKee's like a nothing burger, then you just try again at quarterback in the draft next year. You'll probably be bad enough to be picking fairly highly. So I think that's like a good solution for them. They could also do they could also totally do the Geno Smith thing here too, and just, you know, try to do like a veteran situation for a year. But yeah. And just roll with it. That's sort of what I think the Cardinals are going to try to do. Like, get the I'm not going to say I'm high on the Cardinals this year, but the more I think about the LaFleur hire, the more I really like it. Now I'm not going to be you about the Cardinals, okay? But I'm just like much more. My stance has been on the Cardinals. We talked about this a lot. Is that all these guys needed to get away from each other? Now they're all away from each other. I'm actually fascinated to track like how Petzing does in Detroit. What becomes of these wide receivers that I think needed a restart? Like what's Kyler Murray going to do in his second stop? I'm much more interested in this whole situation now that all these guys are finally away from each other and the variables have changed. So yeah, again, I'm not going to say I'm high on the Cardinals, but I am more interested. I didn't want to think about them or talk about them for months last year. And then I kept having to because they were a fantasy scam and you had to talk about them on the fantasy show, and Michael Wilson saved my ass in so many leagues. It was great. It's just like, so I'm now actually interested and I'm open to, I'm Cardinals curious, where I've been like, no thanks on the Cardinals for months now.
I have found myself. I'm kind of glad to hear this, because one of my notes on the Cardinals, like even before we got into this, was, I know we've already talked about this, I'll be quick. I said, I've really warmed to this hiring. They're not going to be good, but the Cardinals are definitely going to be interesting. LOL, please make me stop. that's how I was going to leave, because I didn't think you would have some optimism.
Like, that's it. This is February 17th. You just have to hold on to that exact feeling for four or five months. Just don't escalate it from there.
I told you this, I'll say this on air too. I did a show with a Cardinals team that covers the Cardinals, and right before the show they're like, how's your brother doing? I was like, I don't have a brother. Do you mean a cousin? And they're like, no, Nick Tice, the Cardinals staffer, it's an analytics guy there. I was like, oh no, there's no relation. And we actually kind of look alike, which is very funny. And I actually met Nick last year at the combine. He came up and said, hey, everyone thinks we're related. And I was like, well, you have the last name Tice and you're in football. It's going to be hard. But no, he was really nice and everything. But and then the guy goes, you didn't mean it in a bad way. He goes, oh, that's why I thought you liked us or you liked the Cardinals, was because your brother was on the staff. And I'm like, no, that was just my own poor analysis that led me to that path. Definitely. There wasn't any relations.
This guy definitely could be you. He could be like your
we
cousin.
Do look alike.
Yeah.
He's tall too. That's he's fairly tall too. I know. There's definitely I could get it. But yeah. We are not related. I have nobody and no family members are on current football staffs. There's a college staff, but no NFL staffs right now. I think probably stick with Jacoby Brissett. I said possibly Jimmy G if LaFleur really wants to do that. But I said that feels like 6-1, half dozen the other. I'd rather go with Jacoby. Yeah. I liked your McKee option is actually a very valid option as well. That would be kind of a nice path that they can maybe do. And I actually think he's a great offensive fit for McVay, LaFleur, this LaFleur offense, or I guess the Packers too, LaFleur as well. Or that's why with the Vikings, because that offensive system is more McVay-ish than Shanahan-ish, because now we're getting into cousins of this tree and offshoots of everything. Yeah. So I do think he's a great fit for LaFleur / McVay type of offense. So that's a good one. I actually really like that. Falcons. This is the last one we wrap up with. The team that signed a quarterback and drafted a quarterback top 10. 2 years later, less than that, we have quarterback questions going on with them. Michael Penix Jr. is heading to year 3, coming off another ACL injury. Kirk Cousins, they said, okay, we're done, likely to be cut, all that stuff. What do you think about the Falcons? What do you think they should go down? They hire Kevin Stefanski. We've talked about basically every Browns quarterback of the last 5 years on the show. Maybe not. Oh, Baker Mayfield. We got to throw him in there. There we go. Now we checked every Browns quarterback from the last 5 years. But Kevin Stefanski, Falcons, what do you think about this quarterback empty spot or potential empty spot or quarterback answers, however you want to do it?
Okay, two roads diverge in the woods here for the Falcons. One, you basically you cut Kirk Cousins, but you just bring him back on like a more palatable deal here. That's possible because then again you can stay committed to Michael Penix, see what that looks like. Mm-hmm. Kirk Cousins, obviously, people have been trying to get Kirk Cousins to Kevin Stefanski and the Browns. Well, now you just bring Kevin Stefanski to the Falcons, and Kirk Cousins and him finally get to reunite there. That makes a lot of sense. And by the way, I actually thought Kirk was acceptable for the Falcons when he was starting last season.
He was acceptable.
He was better than because he could actually move a little bit as opposed to what he was in 2024.
Yes.
Totally.
Yes.
So I think that's actually plausible, especially if they do believe in Michael Penix still. And I know it's a totally new front office, but Matt Ryan, for what it was worth, has in his media availability has said like, oh, we still believe in Michael Penix. So I think that's one possible thing. The other possible path, I do think they are an interesting Malik Willis team. If he's not just it's going to the Dolphins, it's set it and forget it there. I think they make sense as a Willis team because you can really lean into like a zone heavy run game, which is what Stefanski probably wants to do, and it's definitely what they were doing under Zach Robinson with Bijan Robinson. You could even potentially bring Tyler Allgeier back. I know Allgeier actually is a really interesting free agent this offseason, but you could potentially keep him around.
No one's talking about him either.
you've got a good little kind of rushing attack there with those guys. And Malik Willis, you mentioned some of it was designery and everything, but when he actually did have to push the football last year, he was willing to test tight windows. Yes. He was willing to push it downfield, which that overlaps really well with Drake London's game, who I'm very fascinated to see how he's deployed in this new offense. So, yeah, I think that would be the more exciting path. And I don't know what Falcons fans' appetite would be for that if they see it as just kind of another half measure at the position. But I think you are recovering. If you're done with Penix and you're like, this isn't going to work, you're recovering from a huge miss at quarterback. You took him eighth overall. You have to kind of do the half measure stuff there for a little bit. And I think that would be a fun pairing.
I think half measure is kind of what they are going to do there. It's hard because they fired GM and head coach. There's no one with ties. But then Arthur Blank, you know, the owners get tied to these guys too, and they don't want to just let some of these quarterbacks go. So, like, I think they're going to try to do what they can with Penix, but it's just more just doing kind of like what we were talking about with the Colts, like having kind of like, all right, someone to get us through and maybe as an emergency option if this is like just totally not going to be a fit. Penix can't be under center. You know, he already had issues with that before this other knee injury. He's another guy that is hit and miss throwing over the middle that goes back to all the way to Washington Indiana as well. But at Washington, you know, he's so inaccurate over the middle, more of an outside thrower. So like that doesn't really fit with Stefanski. This is the same issues he had when Deshaun Watson was that it was like Stefanski wants to do his under center drop back, you know, play action, run. And yet he gets Baker, who's a gun quarterback, who he can throw over the middle a little bit, but he's more of a guy that throws those out routes to Sterling Shepard that we joke about. That's what he prefers to do. So that wasn't a great fit because he doesn't like turning his back on play action. Then Deshaun Watson comes in, he wants to operate exclusively out of the gun. He likes his RPO games, even play action stuff. He likes everything in front of him. And then now going on to wherever the quarterback Frankenstein's monster was this year. Now, I think that Penix is not a great fit for that. So I'm curious, like, if they think the same thing already, or they're like, no, we can make this work because he's got big arm, yada, yada. I think they just have the same questions we do from the outside. I think what you said about trying to bring Cousins back on a more team-friendly deal actually makes a lot of sense. Overlap with Stefanski, Minnesota, offensive fit. I mean, same kind of offensive fit for what he's been doing. That kind of feels like the safest, best option for them and kind of just kicking it forward with what they had. But new people calling plays and overseeing it, I guess. And then maybe just in 2027, we figure out what we have to do. Cousins' stats, though, I was just looking as you were talking, kind of like equivalent to like what? Shoot. I mean, he's a little better than Bryce Young. Kind of what Kyler did was kind of the same as what Cousins did last year. Tua had similar stats. Baker's were slightly better, but still, it's kind of like quarterback 24 last year, but not an abomination, and actually was operable, can actually hand the ball off to both directions, as opposed to the year before where they had to run one-sided because of one like complaint from under center. God, these teams. I love the NFL, man. I'm telling you. I already miss it. I want games again. But, you know, I think that's what they do. They kind of kick it forward this year and then figure out what they have next spring. It seems like a lot of teams are doing that because I think the options are going to be a little bit more available. But I think that's wrapping it up. Any other closing thoughts before? Do you think Joe Burrow and CJ Stroud get traded? I don't. But just talk about them as well.
Like, also, don't think they get traded.
Did not bring his name up. Oh, yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
No, no, you go.
What were you going to say? Okay. Well, I was going to say, Tanner McKee. We mentioned Tanner McKee so much. I wonder if there's like any appetite for like a Jalen Hurts trade. Probably not. He's on a monster contract, but, you know, the Eagles are always, or maybe not a trade, but, you know, just like, hey, what if the quarterback factory, you know, that's always a thing in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. I think and again, you and I are going to be talking a lot of coaching here, not just in later today on the fantasy show, but you'll be on the NFC show. I'm very fascinated to hear what you think about the Sean Mannion hire, because it's like interesting, but it's such a potential hard left turn from what they've been doing. And do they see it as bigger than that? Right. So again, just maybe that's like a dark horse storyline that people probably aren't talking about, but you know, hey, they could say, hey, we took a quarterback in the second round and we've got Tanner McKee and we're just completely starting over. But I tend to think that's complete fan fiction. So it's more likely than a Joe Burrow trade. So let's yes. But then people keep wanting to talk about that. Let's at least throw that out there.
Even a Stroud one. No, the two names I didn't really mention much. You mentioned them though, but Mac Jones, the thing with me, I think the 49ers, they want both guys on the roster. And like, as much as I think Mac Jones could go for a pretty penny relatively, like let's say like a third rounder, is that I think because of how Purdy got banged up last year and then Purdy's contract, if you look after next year, it's a little fungible. And I thought Purdy would be fine. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying like, oh, get rid of Purdy. But same. I'm just saying how the Fournette, I think what they're doing is just kind of mitigating any more injuries that could come up and also just giving themselves options after that. You see, Shanahan guys are aggressive with this stuff. Like, him and his dad, they will do that. They do not care. This is the same thing. They went, oh, yeah, we're moving up for Trey Lance. Bye. You know, like they're willing to be aggressive with it. So, like, I think maybe the best way I could put it is I don't think Mac Jones is as movable as maybe I thought a couple months ago. And then the other guy, Spencer Rattler, I brought him up a little bit, but he's a little bit more live as a trade option and an interesting one for teams that maybe like, okay, we'll just throw a dart at this and it's not a big commitment. Cap's not bad at all. He's a day three pick, only a couple years left. But teams like, not really saying the Vikings, but like, I won't even say the Cardinals, but like Cardinals. The Steelers were one that came to mind. Yeah, the Cardinals, I don't know. I don't know what the Cardinals want. The Browns might be an interesting dart throw. Basically, any Tanner McKee team we brought up, maybe this is like the Diet Coke option. Yeah. The Jets, if they just want another name to throw into the quarterback room, could be interesting. The Dolphins as well. Like that would be another name. I didn't kind of bring him up because I couldn't find that one team that was perfect for him. But he's more of a live trade option and not – and I would say I've – freaking Kenny Pickett's getting traded for multiple times. Like Spencer Rattler has shown enough that he should be traded for a QB desperate team that wants some options.
So I agree.
I did want to give him a little bit of a shout before we wrapped this up. Whew. We're closing it out today. That was every time I think it's going to be a short pod, we go double what I think, but I love it. But we're closing it out today. I'll be back. Oh, is that my brother?
That's your cousin. That's your cousin brother.
Shout out Nick
Tice.
Nick Tice. Yeah, he works in the analytics department. I met him last year. Yeah. It's kind of
that could definitely
you're right. We could be cousins.
Yeah. You could be related for sure. I'm not gonna say brother, but definitely. Yeah, that could
definitely
that
related.
Could, yeah, that could
it's
be
the eyes. Yeah. The lack of eyes. Yeah, that really does a lot. But we're closing it out today. I'll be back on Thursday with Chuck. We'll have plenty of stuff. The combine's coming up. Free agency's coming up. We'll have a ton to talk about. But I'm Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice. That's Matt Harmon. You can find him at Matt_BYB on social media. Matt, we're doing some shows together. Let's talk about
That's right.
What are we doing? It'll be fun. You hinted at it already, but we'll be doing that today and later.
This week on, that's right. Two-parter on the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. Got AFC. That's going to be coming out today on Tuesday. Coach's show, all the new play callers, and then you'll be joining us for the NFC on Thursday as well. So as if we didn't talk enough today, Nate, we're going to be talking a lot this week about coaches and schemes and spreadsheets. And, yeah, it's going to be fun.
It's the best. Yeah, I know. Thanks for letting me get my rough draft of takes. I think next week I'm doing a bunch of shows at the Combine, like guest appearances, and so it's nice. Doing a cult show. So it's like, all right, already got some thoughts going. We're juiced up for Combine interviews next week, but make sure you check out the Fantasy Forecast. Some great stuff, a ton of great stuff at Yahoo right now. Make sure you check out our Olympic coverage. I think we're doing an amazing job. Not even just saying that, like great stuff on the Olympics. So make sure you check that out on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. And check out everything at Yahoo. Check out everything Football 301. Subscribe to us, follow us, rate us 5 stars wherever you get your podcasts, or here on Yahoo, on YouTube, on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. Make sure to like and subscribe there. We do live shows there. None right now, but there might be some breaking stuff. We don't know what's going to happen in the next couple months, so we will see. But thanks to Stone, Austin, and Carter behind the scenes. We got a new name in there. Yeah, behind the scenes for making this look and sound good. Really, the whole team kicks a lot of ass. So thank you guys so much. Thank you all for listening. See you guys next time.